Welcome to the podcast, Jason Pédagogie Numérique. I'm Florence Sedaminou-Murate and I'm glad you're listening to us today. In this episode of JPN, I chat with the passionate Liz Charles from Dawson College, and we will discuss the beginning of this community of teachers with innovative pedagogical practices called SALTIS. Liz will share the story of how she began in active pedagogy. So, I hope you enjoy listening. Good morning, Elizabeth. We're using in the network. Liz, I never know actually, like, what do you prefer exactly? Do you prefer people to call you Liz or Elizabeth? I never know.
Well, certainly I'm most comfortable with Liz, but I must say I do like how Elizabeth sounds in French. It's so formal in English.
Elizabeth. Elizabeth. Yeah. Okay.
Elizabeth sounds very sweet.
Okay.
Elizabeth is very, it's very formal and,
yeah.
And mm-hmm. I like Liz better. But I respond to both.
Okay, great. So thank you, Elizabeth, for coming for this short interview. We are here today to talk about a bit about SALTIS, a bit about your history. I guess when I met you for the first time, I will say physically, it's when I came with Pascal Blanc at Dawson and we were talking about a project that you were developing in SALTIS. I think it was the course flow. And I was like quite impressed by the knowledge. And I was like very interested to know more about what you were doing. And I guess you're one of the person who has developed an expertise and that we always want to know more about how SALTIS starts and all this history about SALTIS, but we will discuss about that today. And we start with my ritual question. Like, tell me a little bit more about your, I will say in French, parcours. I don't have the word coming now, but yeah.
Well, first off, thank you so much for inviting me to do this podcast. I'm delighted to talk about SALTIS and my project. So to answer your question, my interest in understanding how students learn and what could be done about students learning started as part of my PhD. I think what drives me or drove me at that point in time was trying to figure out when teachers try very hard to get students to learn something and they still have difficulty learning, like, what is the problem? That question drove me because I know that there are certain topics that teachers complain about finding ways to get that kind of learning happening. And my PhD was looking at an area called conceptual change, which tells us that it's not that you don't put effort in. It's not that the teacher isn't trying hard. What it tells us is that those particular topics have a lot of difficulty in the way that the knowledge is formed. And that made me want to understand how do we help both the teacher communicate what they need to do to help students learn, and how is it that when change happens and students understand, what is exactly happening? So that's been at the core of my my interests. And I was fortunate enough to do a postdoc in a topic that dealt with collaborative learning and inquiry-based learning, which is very much along the lines of what active learning is.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience brought me when I came back to Montreal after my postdoc, it allowed me to develop a grant with one of my colleagues, Sylvia D'Apollonia in particular. And together with some colleagues from physics, we started looking at this particular topic. How can we use inquiry-based types of instruction? In the particular case, it was called learning by design. Mm-hmm. So using these kinds of ways to teach, and how could that help with this conceptual change? And we saw that it was helping. It was helping students, those who were very bright. It allowed them to question some of the things that they didn't realize they didn't know, such as how do you design an experiment? How do you, how do you organize your knowledge? How do you ask questions? And for those who struggled, it gave them a sense of agency that they could access this kind of thinking. No, it didn't. It's not a panacea, of course. You know, mm-hmm. There isn't any quick fix. But that encouraged me a lot, and more than anything else, it encouraged me to. It provided an opportunity to work with some brilliant colleagues who were also interested in physics education. And why physics? It's because there's been a lot of research in physics education, and it's probably it certainly is transferable. I mean, you know, that's mm-hmm. always been one of the struggles that we have is people think, well, you're doing this in physics, you're doing this in science. How does it apply to other fields? Well, it's learning, and we're trying to understand learning. It just happens that you have to have a topic. You know, you have to have a topic of focus, and our focus has been, you know, physics.
So you yourself you're teaching physics. Are you, like your discipline? No. So,
no.
So what is your discipline? I don't even know. How come?
Well, that is the sort of proverbial, joke amongst ourselves, because I'm definitely not a physicist.
Okay.
And I come from the field of photography, as the discipline that my interest was, generated probably by my own struggle to understand, you know, like, many young people in Quebec, you know, you start off in CEGEP and, you know, you start off in, taking a deck in science, mm-hmm. and you slowly migrate to something else because, you know, you're struggling with a physics course or a math course. And, it's always been one of the things that it's a puzzle. It's a perplexing question. Why is it difficult to learn something? And I think that to me is the key. Why is it difficult to learn certain things and other things are relatively, easy to learn? And it so happens that the things that are difficult to learn tend to be, have a very similar structure. They're more complex in the way that, there are many, many, many parts of them are counterintuitive. Many parts of them are dependent on, constraints and so on and so forth. That's basically, they're just, you know, very, you know, there are things that, we need to support students more in, I guess that's sort of maybe.
So this was the starting of your research, but like, you have to give me a date about like when you really start to question yourself and with your colleagues about the fact that we have to cater for students' needs in terms of teaching them and adapt. We're talking a bit about like all the concepts of the universal design for learning, when we have to cater for the different needs. Like, when did it really start?
My colleagues and I recognized what we were doing. Probably we recognized the importance, I guess, of what we were doing probably sometime around 2009 when we were, at that point in time, we had a research project. As I said, Saltese is born out of a research group. Mm-hmm. And we had a Perea grant with our research group that now included Nathaniel Lazry, Chris Whitaker, Kevin Lenton. And these are colleagues. So Chris is from Dawson College. Nathaniel is from John Abbott. Kevin is from Vanier College. And together, we recognized that what we were doing was helping to generate interests at certainly at Dawson in terms of active learning classrooms that Chris Whitaker and I were lucky enough to spearhead the development there of the first active learning classroom, full-fledged active learning classroom. And that was around, around 2009. It started with, it started with the physics department. And, even without my input, actually, it was, Chris Whitaker and his colleagues who started with a lab, converting one of their labs into a more active space. And our research, Chris joined our research team at the time, and that's where the interest in looking at these spaces and the kind of pedagogy that Nathaniel and I had been working on was implemented and could be implemented in these new spaces. And I guess if you were to say that there was a moment in time, mm-hmm. I would say it's 2009. We recognized that not only was the kind of instruction that we had been exploring, not only could it help with this conceptual change that I'm referring to, but it could be more broadly thought of as a way of helping students engage and engage meaningfully with the learning that had to happen with the content, as well as engaging with each other, which is typically considered collaborative learning.
Okay, so we're reaching now the 2022 year. For you, how did you observe the impact of, you know, the starting this research, like having a lab, like transforming to an active learning classroom? What are the impacts of this Perea project research on the, say, Dawson and the college network in terms of active pedagogy? Have you seen that some return of this research has really a positive impact? How could you explain all this work and the work that has been done now and what we still have to do to work on that? I'm talking about that because yesterday I had this conversation with a very active teacher from Vanier. She teach a biology. She's really active. She had several projects and she was concerned. She said, I'm reading a lot about the Generation Z. And she said, you know, I've observed the pandemic and the fact that we are confined, that the students, they don't need us as knowledgeable teachers. They need us to facilitate what actually they have access to. The knowledge nowadays, I mean, the students have access to knowledge nowadays, I will say online. But the thing is that they still need filters to help them process the different knowledge that they get online. And she was like, but we need more. So I'm concerned about that. It's extremely difficult for me as a teacher to know how I can help them. What can you do about like Saltese work and what you've developed to help those teachers?
Okay, so you've asked a lot of questions.
Yes, it's true.
so
many questions.
Maybe I'll go one at a time. Mm-hmm. So to start off with the first question you asked about making an impact. We started in, 2009 doing what we would now call active learning. And very much credited to the work that we've been funded through Korea. That's the ministry's research grant for colleges, for college teachers. We've been very fortunate in being able to be awarded these grants to continue the work that we do. And I think it's the impact of that work has been Saltese. So Saltese being our community of practice that grew out of the research and the work that it generated and the interest that it generated amongst our colleagues who wanted to understand how to better they want to reach their students in a way that you're describing, but we know that knowledge is not given to people. You cannot transmit your knowledge to another person. You can help them to build their knowledge. You can facilitate ways for them to learn how to develop and build knowledge, which would be things like helping students learn how to think critically. That's a very important thing. How do you help them understand that they need to monitor and reflect? Those are the kinds of things that we consider metacognitive skills, self-regulating skills. Those things can be fostered in students, and those are the things that allow them to learn deeply. But we cannot take the knowledge that we have and pour it into somebody else. We have to encourage them to want to explore and put those situations in a way that it's manageable and feasible. So that's what we've been doing and learning about in our research, at the same time as fostering other colleagues who want to do this kind of work. And that's what the Saltese community is. And we built that along with our colleagues from the research group of people that I mentioned. So that's with Nathaniel Lazary and Chris Whitaker and Kevin Lenton and Michael Dugdale. Those are the people that, we brought together at the colleges, the three main Anglophone colleges. And we also had colleagues at McGill that in the Faculty of Education who wanted to understand how to reach teachers, because this is a huge problem. This problem has existed for the last 60 years. Like, how do we take innovation, that things that we know in the research, and how do we get them into the hands of teachers so that they can use them? This is difficult. This is not a trivial problem. And it's been, as I said, it's been about 60 years that we have been trying to make this kind of move, knowing that changing practice is difficult. So the Saltese community basically is one where it's if I were to sum it up in a few words, I would say it's one of peers working with peers. So teachers working with teachers, supporting and modeling, showing people how do I do something. It's sharing both your ideas about how you implement. It's sharing the tools that you develop to implement these kinds of new pedagogies. It's examples of the actual lessons that you create. Those are the things that we've been sharing for the last Saltese is now over 10 years old. Starting sometime in 2011. And that's what we've been building and sharing. So it's our research that goes into the practices of my colleagues, and practices are the things that we share with the community. And it's that fundamental idea that together we are stronger. You know, working mm-hmm. together, we are better. Working together and being a community, we don't have to take on the entire change or by ourselves. We can take a small piece, and you take a small piece, and together we share what we've done. And the research is very important there, because mm-hmm. we want to validate if the things we are implementing are working, and are they getting the result that we hope, which is, in the end, we're all doing this because at the core, it's to help improve students' learning.
Okay. So talking about PCs, about sharing, about actually the how can we transfer the knowledge in between the teachers and the peer work, the community of practice. How do you see Saltis in a, I will say, long term? Saltis so far is well known in the Anglophone college network, but still we have really to work a lot on how we can work together with the Francophone college network. What Saltis, which is actually something that I'm saying as a person who actually go into the Anglophone system and observe and try to make circulate the knowledge and the practice that are done in the college network, help the whole college network to work in teams, like working in pairs, because I guess it's something that I observed from the Francophone system. And I'm really interested in how Saltis help those teachers developing or trying to pull the academic research into the field.
You know, you've raised a problematic that
this is why.
It's a very it's a very interesting one, and a very and one that we wish to resolve. I would be delighted to have more of the sharing amongst our colleagues in the Francophone network, more sharing of the tools and the resources that we've built from Saltis, and the work of my colleagues and the people who participate in the Saltis community. So we have an annual conference. It's in June, and we often ask our colleagues in the Francophone colleges to contribute, but we don't have clear vehicles for making this kind of announcement. Obviously teachers have limited time to do these kinds of workshops or presentations or attend conferences. There's so many conferences to choose from at that time of year and in June. Yes, it is a problem. It's a problematic. I don't want to call it a problem. I think problematic is more mm-hmm. Appropriate.
Yes. Yes.
And so I don't know the answer, but I do know that we have a website, and our website is designed in such a way that I hope that it's accessible to our Francophone colleagues, in terms of, you know, the content is typically in English, but many of the people who contribute are bilingual and are willing to share. We also have the tools that we've developed. You mentioned CourseFlow, for instance.
Yeah.
That's a tool that we designed that came out of a need to try to communicate with our colleagues what they were doing in their lessons. And we've developed a visual language, and that particular tool is fully translated into French if anyone wants to use it. So the content you put in is obviously in your language, but the instructions about how to use it and, you know, when the cues are translated. So that's available.
Is it an open source tool?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
It's open. It's open source. It's free. You can use it. You can find it from the website. And in fact, the tool is now, we developed it for the lesson, to develop a lesson to be able to secure, to have teachers, show each other their lessons. But then we developed it for the next level up, which is the course level. So people could, teachers could enter their learning outcomes. They could enter their competencies, for their course, which led us to develop it even further up the chain to the program level. So now CourseFlow you can enter an entire program into CourseFlow with all the competencies, sub-competencies, learning outcomes, and linking them to the courses. Mm-hmm. And once again, that can be done in French. You put in the content. So there are ways that Saltese, the tools that we have can be used by our Francophone colleagues, and we would love that to happen, because we know that trying to do active learning is hard, because you are changing teachers' practice. And as I said, you know, you go back to the literature and you see it's been over 60 years.
Yeah.
the struggle to how do you change practice? Well, you do it one step at a time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you know, any long journey starts with one step. That's all it is. One step at a time. And I believe that what I can honestly say that Saltese has done is we have probably moved, you know, 11 steps. Every year we move forward. Every year we bring something new to the table. And what that is, you know, it is the result of my colleagues and their willingness to share how to implement. Because that's the big problem with the knowledge transfer. When people talk about, academics talk about knowledge transfer, it's often transfer from research to practice. But in fact, the practitioner does something special with that knowledge. They transform that knowledge into pragmatic things. And that has not been studied nearly enough by the academic world. And I believe that is the secret sauce. How does someone take the knowledge that we get from research, puts it into practice, implements something, and make it work? When they do that, that is what we're trying to capture at Saltese, is what was that magic that they added to make that research knowledge work? And that's what we're hoping to do, is to have many instances of that implementation. So how did I do that? How did I make that work? That is what I believe Saltese has done year after year, is showing teachers how other teachers have made something work.
Mm-hmm. And so I have so many questions, and the time is running so fast. I had like this question about. I had a conversation also with another teacher, and we were talking about Saltese, and he's saying, like, when I think about Saltese, the only thing I see is the fact that, okay, they're working on active pedagogy, but it's just in the field of science. As a language teacher, I don't see myself being a part of it. I see that in the community, they have a lot of science teachers, STEAM, and I was like, I don't think so, but what can you say about this? And I think it goes back to the fact that you say it starts with physics. It's maybe this image of Saltese is just about science. Is it?
Well, the answer is Saltese is about learning. It's about designing good instruction that results in better learning. And it's not discipline based. However, it does came out of a field, that happened to have a lot of challenge, and need for implementing and need for building, instruments, that could evaluate if change was happening. And that's part of, you know, being a researcher. You know, you, as a researcher, you can't take on everything. You take on a very small slice of the world and try to understand, that. And then from that, you can infer other things that might, be relevant. So, I know it's not a satisfying answer for people who want a quick, and easy answer, but, you know, Saltese is, it's a community. And in that community, we have many different types of disciplines.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have more of one type of discipline? The answer is yes.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter of more people recognizing that if they have something that they wish to share, we are very, very open to receiving that kind of material and helping to structure it and helping to share it, distribute it amongst others. So I would say that that person should, if that is their observation, you know, we welcome them and say, please come and share what you, you know, you have developed. Mm-hmm. But I think, there's also a misunderstanding about when you try to understand learning, the discipline does
disappear.
Well, there are some general principles mm-hmm. that are ubiquitous about learning, but there are also discipline-based aspects of it. So we also need people to want to research those areas as well. Yes. As I said, you can't study everything. Otherwise, you know nothing. You have to focus on one thing and understand it deeply. But we can infer a lot of things. So there are lots of ways that we can try to understand another discipline's challenge and help them disentangle what parts of the knowledge that we understand might be applicable to that particular discipline. Again, I know I don't believe in, you know, sound bites, and I don't believe
yes.
in quick answers.
Mm-hmm.
But I take people's, I try to take people's, you know, the challenges that they face in teaching. I try to take those seriously to try to answer their questions seriously. And I hope that, I just think that people, I guess I go back to my philosophy. We are better together than we are alone. You know,
yes,
you,
definitely.
We may not have as many language teachers as someone who teaches language might need or want, but if you joined, you would be one more.
Yes.
We definitely are welcoming to all disciplines, you know, and even, ideas about, you know, you mentioned, universal design for learning. That's something that is not, that's not my field of expertise, but there are aspects of active learning that fit and are complementary to those principles of universal design. And to me, those are the kinds of conversations that we enjoy having. And the community is, the community of Saltese is basically just a community of peers. You know, that's mm-hmm. what they are.
Yes.
You know, we are teachers. We are educational researchers. We are professional. We are, from the professional sector. So pedagogical counselors or instructional designers, anyone who is curious about how to make a better outcome for students' success, academic success, that is, and how to encourage teachers who want to take these new pedagogies and make them work. That's what Saltese is.
Okay.
It does have a lot of active learning, but active learning is a bit of a catch-all for a lot mm-hmm. of different types of approaches.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that also is something I take seriously. To me, it's always, is there evidence that this thing can make a positive impact in students' learning and the outcome of their efforts? And if the answer is yes, then it's worthwhile investigating how it's achieving that and, you know, and then supporting teachers who are trying to do that.
Okay. So we're reaching actually the end of our our conversation, but I always like ending the conversation about your project now. What are the theme or what are you working on?
An interesting
few ones because I know that it's kind of large, but what is the theme? And I know that Saltese is organizing the conference also, so what are the themes you're working on nowadays?
Okay, so we have my colleagues and I have another Perea grant, and this time it is with colleagues from André Laurendeau as well.
Okay.
So Caroline Comier and mm-hmm. Véronique Turcotte. We are collaborating with them, and we're working on an inquiry-based lab project, which is it's a full circle moment for me, because it goes back to my postdoctorate work in looking at inquiry-based and mm-hmm. design. So that's on the research side. On the Saltese side, our conference coming up, we are looking at ways that active learning is, what is the new landscape that we as a maturing community should be looking at? And some of those are our social responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps even social. I don't know if it's really social justice, but it's certainly equity, because mm-hmm. we've been finding from the research that active learning has a very positive impact on students who typically have been marginalized in, mm-hmm. and again, it sounds like science is the thing, but in STEM, one of the researchers who was our keynote last year, Scott Freeman, he did a very important meta-analysis. He and his colleagues did a very important meta-analysis in 2020, published in 2020. And they're showing that active learning pedagogies are doing a better job than traditional, significantly better job than traditional instruction for a population of students who've been typically underrepresented in, mm-hmm. in science and STEM disciplines. That to me is basically, that is a critical finding, because if we want to have a more equitable society, in my mind, we need to support those students who have been left out mm-hmm. typically. And if his findings are accurate, then it means that the work that we're doing, my colleagues are doing as part of the community of active learning teachers, aka SALTees, type of work. That is a really important contribution because, you know, the thing is that you know, it's life is, I believe life has got a few key principles. Mm-hmm. And one of them is if you teach students how to think and you encourage them to use that thinking, that those ways of thinking, then they have a sense of agency and they can then do more with that if you keep on promoting it and you keep on giving them opportunities to practice. I know it sounds, you know, it's almost, the simplicity of it is, you know, you teach a man to fish or you teach a woman.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and I think that to me is, an important thing is we are giving students certain skills, but we're also giving them a mindset. And maybe that's what we haven't paid attention to is that mindset. When we do things like collaborative learning, when we do things like working together, having students work together on projects, and giving them, support as opposed to telling them, what you're doing is you're allowing them to recognize that they can do something. They're allowing them to recognize that their voice, their contribution to the collaborative conversation can make a difference, and they can support each other. They know how to use the vocabulary. They learn how to use that knowledge that they've been building. As I said, you have to build knowledge yourself. Mm-hmm. And that change in their mindset that they can do it, that they can come up with an answer. They can find the resources to do it. That mindset, I believe, makes a very important change to students who don't typically have a voice.
Yeah, I mean, in French, we will say, I'm drinking your words. I don't know what is the expression in English, but you know what I mean? It's like, to be honest, like when you were talking about this research, like I'm really curious to read this research. So definitely I will have some resources, when we published the podcast on Eductive website. But as a Black woman, like I always had this mindset and it's the reason why I didn't do science or things because I was sure that it was something that was not for me. So I was explaining that like, maybe today, I mean, I say to my son, I wish I could be born the time you're born now, because there is so many things that have been done in terms of pedagogy. And I'm definitely sure, I'm not saying that I will be the best surgeon in the world, but like, I will say that the mindset is definitely important. And if we can help the students to build those tools to develop this mindset, maybe the space will only be the limit for every one of us. Yeah.
And I think, you know, to close that statement, I think you don't need to end up being a scientist, but I think what we are trying to do is, you know, when people say critical thinking, what they really mean is that students can evaluate the information that they get. And I think this goes back to the colleague that you were referring to. What we really want is a population of citizens who are able to evaluate and critically evaluate critically the information that they hear, the information that they read. And that comes from all of that kind of practice of knowing that you can build knowledge, and you know that there is not everything is, everything should be evaluated. Everything should be, looked at and assessed as, does this have evidence? Those are the kinds of skills that we're really saying, can we evaluate these things based upon the evidence that is presented to us? And what does evidence mean? And, mm-hmm. and that to me is what we're really trying to achieve with all our students, regardless of if they're taking languages mm-hmm. or if they're taking
photography.
Photography, exactly. You want them to understand these very core ways of thinking. To me, that's a very important. That's universal. So no matter what you teach, that's what you want your students to be able to do. And that to me is what this kind of pedagogy allows. It allows students to truly practice these things. And get feedback from each other. All of those are very important towards building that mindset. And I do agree with you. It really does start with the mindset. Can I judge this thing myself?
So thank you so much. As I said, I have many questions, so we definitely have to do a part two, because now you're like the transversality also of the discipline. It's like not just about, as a language teacher, I'm teaching just my discipline, which is language, but everything that comes with in terms of soft skills also. We will talk or discuss about that in the second part. Thank you so much, Liz, to be a part. I mean, to converse, to discuss with me about all the subjects. I will add most of the resources you were talking about with the podcast. And I really enjoying talking to you and discussing, having this conversation. So thank you very much.
Same here. It's been a great pleasure talking with you.
And I hope my English is not that bad. Like, I will
see. Oh my goodness, it's amazing.
Oh, I hope and so.
I only wish my French were amazing.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much. Have a nice day. Merci beaucoup.
Merci. Au revoir.